The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Booker Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
Folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. We've had so many questions as of late. We grabbed Chaz Martin. Say hello, Chaz.
Dude, Steve, I am pumped to be on the show again. And
absolutely,
I am really glad we've got tons of questions to go through. That's
tons.
Awesome.
We are doing more Ask a Pro to answer all your burning Muskie questions. And we got so many, we're just going to jump straight into this thing.
And that's great because we have nothing to do, at least where I'm at here in the Midwest. I'm a little further north than you, Stephen. And
slightly.
It is... It's 25 degrees, so I'm not casting right now.
Oh, man. Yeah, so. I got snow in the boat today. I don't know what's going on with that. It's snowing in Tennessee.
Well, hey, I take snow if you're catching the size fish you're catching right now.
Jeez. Shh, don't tell anybody. There are no fish down here, folks. Don't even worry about it.
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. I did have that stellar day yesterday, and I'm sure we'll talk about that one down the road on sort of funky bycatch. That was probably the biggest shocker for me. We're gonna jump right in. The first question we have is from Rick. Rick says, trolling is kind of new to me. When should I be using a lure like a depth raider, and when should I be using a lure like a shallow raider? What's your take, Chaz?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
So, Rick, my take is generally speaking, I break it into, let's go real easy on this. If I am trying to, make contact with the cover, be that rock, wood, kind of troll the contour of a deep weed edge. But for me, if I want to get my lure down deep, if I think fish, like let's say I'm marking fish that are on the bottom, if my bait clouds are deeper, I'm going to use a deeper running crankbait like a DR to get down where I think the fish are. My mentality with that is real simple. I try to make it easy on the muskies. If they're deep, I want to get my lure running where they are. Now, if bait fish are, if I'm marking stuff up real high, if I got schools of Cisco's high, or if, you know, a lot of times actually when I'm trolling open water more so than anything, not contour lines, but when I'm away from really the breaks and I'm open water trolling, I have a tendency personally to troll a little bit higher. And that's when I'll actually more often than not troll shallow raiders, believe it or not. And then I'd say the third category on my end, Steve, before you go, is mm-hmm. is just when I'm trolling edges of shallow flats, I'll be more apt to troll a shallow raider. Again, just because it's something that's going to be a little bit higher up from, you know, the cover and a little bit more snag resistant. So
yeah,
that's my quick take on that is, you know, where are the muskies located? Where are the bait fish located? And which lure is going to get you closest to where you think the fish are holding and not snag up?
What immediately popped in my head from that question, you remember, I think it's like, I can't remember what Mexican food company is. It's like chips and salsa, and the girl's like, why not both? I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I thought about.
Oh, now you're making me think, Stephen. This is why we have so much fun on this. I'm probably going to take your answer.
You already stole it.
Yeah, I know, because then it's like, I don't know, I'm going to steal it, folks.
Go for it.
When I'm trolling solo, what I'll do, you know, when I'm flatline trolling, and we were just talking about planer boards, it's kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, off air we were talking, almost, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're...
yeah, we're talking trolling off air before we started. So I will hold on to my depth raider rod that's just flatline, and then I will put a shallow raider off the other side, usually with my tiller, I'm on the port side. Now I'll be running another lure like a shallow raider on the starboard side, something that's running shallow that I know is not going to snag up, which is huge because mm-hmm. if I'm not holding the rod and I'm solo, I really don't want another lure that's going to get in a mess of trouble.
Yeah.
So sorry to steal your...
you're right there. I mean, that depended on... Yeah, I hate to say, like, specifics, because everybody needs to check your regs. I know every place has like different limits on rods and stuff. But I mean, if I'm thinking like DRs, and literally it was like what you're laughing about earlier. I what Chaz was referencing about a big fish yesterday, I put a 51 in the boat, and then later that day caught a 40-pound striper, and it came on a depth raider. And I was trolling a depth raider, but what it was almost like, to Rick's question, I had four rods out, so I had a shallow running crank way out closer to the structure, a DR running mid depth and a DR running deep, and then another shallow running bait just way out in open water. So I think what the takeaway from this is, just because it says depth raider or these baits are meant to run deep, you don't have to run them all deep, but spread them out through the water column, just sort of try to hunt down where the fish are if you don't know where they are to begin with. But
absolutely,
you know, I know Chaz, you're thinking the same thing. If I'm trolling, I just want to cover as much as I can. You know, it's about that spreading out. So I don't think it should be one or the other. Obviously, like you said, that if you're trolling shallow weed flats, don't try to drag a depth raider through there.
Right. But, I mean, they do have their specialty areas. Yeah. But I think we're both kind of now converging at this idea of, you know, being versatile and also really, really having as much variety out there as possible. Because like you just said, Stephen, and I absolutely agree with you 110% that, you know, a lot of times when you're trolling or you really are searching and you're trying to cover a lot of water, you're trying to find muskies. So like you said, having a variety of lures out there that are gonna hit different depths is really a key part of it. So I guess to answer the question again, it's like it's really tough to say with one definite answer, right?
I mean, yeah, you got to do it all. But like he's saying, he's new at it. The one thing I'd say is this is one big takeaway for new trollers, or if you're breaking into it, don't fish under the fish. That's one thing I'd heard for years.
Yeah,
you know? And don't try to run too deep all the time. And you know, we've got other stuff. Me and you did a previous podcast just about trolling, and we'll do some more here shortly because we get a lot of trolling questions. But, you know, if you're starting out, just utilize the lures as much as you can. Fish some shallow, fish some deep. Try to fish in combinations if you can use multiple rods, and don't fish under the fish. The next question up is from Paul. Paul says, I'm planning an early spring trip to Lake of the Woods. Any recommendations for a good rod and reel setup? Don't want to use my muskie equipment because I don't want to be accused of fishing for muskies out of season. I promise you, I just copy and paste these questions in here. I don't pre-read them. That is awesome. I'm not even going to comment on the catching muskies outside of season because I don't have a season here, so I don't know what the deal is there.
Yeah, right. Well, I would say from a guy that, you know, so in northern Wisconsin, I mean, obviously, I'm fishing for smallmouth bass. And I guess the way, you know, smallmouth bass,
is that fishing for smallmouth, quote unquote? Like,
no. Okay. So the season is open, so you can target. You can target those bass, but you just can't be, you know, the catch and keep. And I don't know who's keeping bass these days. Obviously, we're really not doing much of that. But but you can target them. You know, your pre-spawn fishing. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, when I'm fishing for bass and pike early in the season, man, am I catching tons of muskie with my little bait caster setups. You know, I'm running my little jerkbait 6'6", you know, medium power rods. I'm running my 7'6", deep running crankbait rods. And, you know, when I am getting into the pike real heavy, I'll put a little fluorocarbon leader on there, and that usually takes care of my bite offs. And I have caught some of my best Three Lakes chain muskies, a couple of my real upper 40s bruisers on my little bass rod.
Yeah.
Well,
he's asking. I mean, here's the thing that I want to know. Hell, this is brought up the thought process for me because it's not something I've had experience. How do you differentiate that someone is fishing for another species other than muskies? I mean, it happens all the time where people are catching these things.
I think it'd be tough to say because, you know, I agree with you because I've said this before because figure eighting for us is, it's not just a I mean, I do it when I'm jigging for walleyes. It's like it's just my body's natural routine right now. So I figure eight when I'm bass fishing. Uh-huh. I've caught tons of big bass in the figure eight. I've caught tons of walleyes and pike in the figure eight. So, you know, tough to say, but you know, I don't know, boy. You know, the Canadian, Department of Natural Resources police. I mean, I guess you certainly wouldn't want to be in hot water with them as far as targeting a species.
I'm sure there's like a legal definition, you know what I'm saying, somewhere in some lofty tome where they've got it written down that, but I mean, as far as like, you know, your question about you don't want to be accused of fishing for muskies out of season. Obviously, we always want to follow every regulation to a T, you know, you want to be as ethical and as good of a sportsman as you can. I mean, to me, it's hard. I think what me and you are sort of laughing about is it's hard to differentiate when you're musky fishing and when you're not, because to protect these post-spawn fish, like the baits you're going to, then this is what doesn't make sense, is the baits that you're throwing for post-spawn fish are pretty much bass baits.
Exactly. You know? I was going to say, our early May, season in northern Wisconsin, I mean, Memorial Day weekend, I mean, I'm not throwing my big-time stuff very often. I definitely think there, you know, early season, there's definitely muskies that are going to eat big baits early. Like, there's no doubt about it. But more often than not, I'm catching my early season stuff, my early season muskies on small presentations. So if anything, I mean, that's what I'd say. If you do end up, you're going to have more fun up there, Paul, targeting big pike early season night, probably you will muskies.
And, you know, and if he's looking for like a specific rod, I mean, I would recommend that St. Croix downsizer is a great rod.
Oh,
you know, something medium heavy.
LMD 710 medium fast. That thing's just unbelievable for small jerk baits, and you could throw bass size swim jigs on that thing. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I think the line gets pretty blurry on what you're doing, like we're saying. So, you know, if you don't want to be accused of musky fishing preseason, don't figure eight. You know, and you'll probably pull a lunker out of there. Like I said, I'm not saying to target that. Nobody take that the wrong way.
I was just saying, boy, I fish for bass early in the season with swim jigs, and I catch more muskies and have more goofy bite-offs, not even targeting them, than I would if I was actually trying to fish for muskies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I catch more muskies in May by fishing for smallmouth and largemouth than I actually would if I rigged up with my Legend Elites and went out there and sort of blasted. I'm not going to catch nearly as many because I got the tiny presentations and the small bass lures, and they eat them up.
I call that busky fishing.
Yeah,
where
right.
You're bass fishing for muskies, and I fish with a leader. We, like I said, where I'm at, and in the South, we don't have any seasons or, you know, to worry about, no regs on that stuff. Man, little swim jigs. That's one of these things that people
swim
like.
Jigs,
it's not even a musky bait, quote unquote. And you know, you can crush them on Cinco's.
You can catch everything.
I know. And we never throw those things. You go, yeah, whatever.
You know, right.
It's just I could go off on a tangent on that. But Paul, like
I know. So could I. I'm already thinking about it.
I know.
I'm like,
but Paul, to answer your question as clearly as possible, I would just avoid throwing anything that is a specific musky bait. Enjoy your trip, and if you catch one, you catch one. If you're not, I mean, if you're pike fishing, the chances are you're probably going to see a nice one come up. All right. The next question is from Edward. And he's referring to the podcast we did with Joe about the littoral shelves. You know, for anybody that listen that hasn't listened to that podcast, Joe's talking about the shallow water areas in a lake where a littoral shelf, littoral zone is going to be where vegetation's growing. Basically, that shallow area, 12 to 0 feet, 10 to 0 feet. And he's wanting to know, what distance do you start out off of a littoral shelf? Do you come in from the deepest water and point in? And which side do you start on? Are you starting into the wind or out of the wind? So essentially, he's wanting to know, how are we working the littoral shelf and how are we playing the wind? And I know you deal with a lot of wind up there. So what do you think, Chaz?
Yes. Boy, so I would say when we're talking wind, for me, it depends on the size of the spot and maybe I'd say the size of the body of water. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's on the bigger waters in Oneida and Vilas County that I'm fishing that are, you know, getting, you know, on actual individual, you know, lakes, whether, I don't know, round or circular, when you're on bigger water that's approaching 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 acres, going into the wind when you've got a stiff breeze of 15, 20 miles an hour is not as effective because you've got such a stiff wind current. But mm-hmm. with that said, though, when I can, I try to work my boat into the wind when I'm fishing shallow, the shallow water zones, because for me, I'm kind of a control freak, and in a sport with not a lot of control when it comes yeah. to muskie, I like to have as much control as possible. And so by that, I mean, when I'm working into the wind, if I take my foot off the pedal on my old cable drive, trolling motor, my boat will really slow its forward momentum and movement. Mm-hmm. And then, I can do a lot from there. You know, if I see a fish, I can take my foot off the pedal. And this is one that you and I talked about at length on our last podcast, uh-huh. even with trolling motors and what, do you stop the motor or not when you're figuring it.
Right.
I'm getting off task.
That's why it's so fun when we do these. Me and you just go off on tangents like crazy.
It is, because so many ideas come to mind, and that's the beauty of the podcast versus writing, is we can just jump around so mm-hmm. much. But I'm into the wind when possible. And with that said, I was just, when you mentioned that, I was thinking of a bite I had on one of my sweet spot lakes in Vilas County. Uh-huh. And, man, I had a bite going on this particular body of water in the littoral zone, where for the entire early summer and midsummer and late summer period, those muskies were up shallow. And it's mm-hmm. almost like there wasn't any, visible signs, because I'm, when it's that thick, it's tough to pick up bait fish in the, weeds that are 3 to 4 feet, and it's, real thick cabbage. Mm-hmm. You'll visually see the bait fish, but you're not seeing them on the screen. And, man, I guess you're talking positioning. I had my boat that whole summer. I lived on the edge, almost over the edge. I was in the weed flat, casting up to the shallow portion of the weed flat to access those fish. I was fishing that zone super shallow. I wasn't as much worried about the edge. I was worried about just where my lure was landing in that right. particular spot. And then I'll just finish up my part here, Stephen, with saying, there's also a lot of times where muskies are relating to those inside turns mm-hmm. and big, very well-defined points on those shallow weed flats that are 12 feet or less. And that's when I'm making sure to position my boat either just off or, in parallel to that weed edge so right. I can,
Pick it apart.
Yeah, because those fish are holding on it. I don't want to get too close to them. I want to kind of have some wiggle room when I'm moving my boat around. And also, so you don't, let's say, overshoot a turn or a point. That's mm-hmm. one of the worst feelings when you're working, especially, weed beds change every year. So you got to be, and they change monthly, too, right. when you get different points and some weeds die off and whatnot. So, staying, in a safe distance outside when you're working an edge too can allow you some forgiveness mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of my thoughts.
Yeah,
on that,
because really that concept with a littoral shelf, we're pretty much talking, like you said, it's weed bed. If I'm dealing with wind, right, and I'll do, and it's just a goofy thing that I've always done. Let's say if the wind is working against the weeds, I'm not saying blowing into the shore, but like parallel to the weeds, I'll start my pass. I'll go up past the weed bed and I'll just do a sloppy pass through it and just let the boat drift, right? And you'll be shocked. You can pick up, you can score the big fish out of that and just like sort of sloppily go through it and then work back up into the wind and then pick it apart that way. Just sort of taking advantage of the wind just to drive you through it with no motor going at all. And I know
that's a really cool take, man.
It's trashy, but it works. but I'll just.
And you're making me think too, because there's certain, I guess when you know uh-huh. your spots well, there's certain, like, let's just say weed flats mm-hmm. that I'll call it the trashy, boat control works well in. And then there's yeah. certain, like, weed flats where I'm like, I really know that I need a really precise control on
right,
to get
yeah.
certain spots the way I want. And that's when I will, you know, if I have to just pick up the trolley motor and reposition the boat, I'll just do it.
And there's, I think I you're thinking, it. In your head, you're thinking these things that are not just weed. It's not a littoral shelf. It's like structure mixed in, or we got like, you know, there's a rock in there and these points and cover is probably what you're thinking, right? Where it's a little bit more of a art, there's some articulation in the weed edge and some structural stuff. I mean, that's going to take precision, but you know, if he's talking just solely like, hey, if I'm playing with the wind, I mean, just obviously you got to have boat control, but like I said, go through, do the sloppy pass and then come under that control pass. And and like you're saying, what you're getting at about, there's just some spots where a blanket answer you're going to get from us is not going to do it for you. Because if you have that complexity in a weed structure, you know, that's based upon the structure of the lake, you know, there's times where like you're talking with the precision and you need to be able to hold that edge and really fan cast and pick that thing apart. Before you're just sort of moving through it haphazard. I mean, it's a case by case basis, but you know, playing with the wind and playing in those weed shelves, a lot of times, I mean, I it's something I'd be remiss. I don't want to move on without saying, here's the problem is if we're talking about windward sides and stuff like this, if a weed bed's hot with fish in it, the wind is usually coming into it. A lot of times, if we're talking, if there's a good blow, which let's say it's a 2-day blow, I mean, that's moving bait into that wind, so that's just going to be shoving your bait or your boat sideways into that weed bed, which, you know, is what I'm thinking of. You need to be focusing on keeping your nose out. I don't know how to articulate it verbally to make, you know.
Well, you're making me think of something. If I could jump in here, too.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Now that I'm thinking about, you know, wind blowing a certain direction on weeds, one thing that I've really started to think about, and I've had some really good success with this, and I actually picked up on it smallmouth fishing, and I probably mentioned this on another podcast with you, Stephen, but you know, I've had a lot of success, you know, really, well, I guess I just say experimenting with what gets a rise out of muskies. I've had you know, your classic stuff where wind is beaten into you know, that shallow water zone we're talking about. And it's a very classic scenario where we're going to cast with the wind. We're going to avoid the backlashes and bring our lure into the wind current. And I've had a lot of success getting in some crazy funky positions with my boat, either in shallow water, casting into the wind and bringing it with the wind current, to trigger some reaction out of these fish that don't respond with the traditional, you know, throw with the wind and bring it back out. Yeah. I don't know if
what you're tapping into is we're getting into some advanced stuff, because those fish have an expectation of where that bait is coming from. So it'd be, if the bait is leaving the weed bed, that's not what they're looking for. I mean, this is why I love doing this podcast with you.
Because we're going down the rabbit hole now.
But I'm going down it, folks. Buckle your seatbelts, because here it comes. I firmly, 100% believe that the way that you present a bait to a spot, you have to have in mind what the muskie is expecting. Because if you're, think of a bait like a hunter in a tree stand, right? So if you're in a tree stand, you have shooting lanes set up in anticipating making a kill, right? A muskie, when he moves into a shallow situation with hunting on his mind, knows where the bait's going to be coming from, because he's sitting there lying in wait and anticipating that the bait should be coming in at a certain way, because that's the way it's always came in when he's eating there.
Yeah, and what you're getting, and Steven, it's such a cool thing, and I love your analogy about the shooting lanes and that you're moving a certain way. You know, it's not that the muskies are smart per se.
No.
It's just that this is their instinctual method of hunting. This is how they are programmed to eat, and it's just like they react a certain way.
Right.
And if you're throwing something even around them in there, and it doesn't trigger that response, then you know, they're not moving. They're not eating it.
I heard an analogy, and I won't rat out the guy that said it, because it's pretty funny. But he said, sometimes, you know, he said, if you want to eat something, I'm going to hand you a plate of food, right? He said, but if somebody hit you in the side of the head with a hot dog, would you eat it? You know what I'm saying?
And that's perfect, man. Yeah,
because I always think about that. If this muskie's on this rock, where does he think his meal's coming from?
So right.
Don't blindside him with like, where did that come from?
Exactly. This is such a, it's a big question, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of ways to answer that. I don't know how to quite wrap it up, but I mean,
keep throwing. You
know, I'm a fan of, you know, I'll just say this, on my smaller waters in northern Wisconsin where I'm at fishing a lot of times, I'm on lakes that are, you know, between 500 and 1,000 acres. I'd say, generally speaking, I'm on water that could be 700, 800, 900 acres, you know, mm-hmm. and I got islands and all kinds of stuff. I'm usually trying to work into the surface current for control in mm-hmm. those shallow water zones. And then, like you said, we're both mixing it up as far as the angles we're hitting. We're doing the sloppy pass versus the, you know, there's so many ways to cut it. You know,
we're pounding this question because there's so much potential in this question, but it makes me think. I can't remember the episode, you might know off the top of my head. Or off the top of your head, where you and Joe are fishing on Lake of the Woods, and you come back and you just start, you crush a fish because you came in at the correct angle. You remember?
Oh, that's probably the hunt for Goliath when Joe, literally, we knew that giant muskie was there, and Joe turns the boat, and he's gonna hear this and love it. But I mean, Joe turns the boat and he fires one in at like a complete perpendicular angle to where we were initially casting, mm-hmm. and the fish that we had already casted over just obviously reacted and attacked with just outrageous fury, and that was Goliath, and that was a legendary catch.
That was a little one.
just a little one.
That stuff, changing your casting angle doesn't work at all unless you want to catch ones that I'm not even going to say how big it was. All right, the next one up, moving on here, is Kyle. What are your best oh my god, Chaz, really? Me and you're going to be on here for 5 hours.
Oh boy.
What are your best spinner bait mods?
Spinnerbait modifications. Well, and Steven, I would say you are a master of modification. And listeners out there, you have no idea. And all this stuff is top secret, obviously. But Steven Paul, you are probably one of the craziest modifiers, I would say. Constantly sending me and Joe photos of cool things you're doing, thinking outside of the box. I would say I'll start off real easy for me, and we're talking, I'm assuming inline or safety pin spinner.
Yes.
I'll go inline spinner. So I'm talking my 500, 700, 800 Magnum 10 Booker tails. The biggest thing that I do, I'd say, if you were to ask me one thing that I modify, and this mm-hmm. is an easy one, but even though this is an easy answer, Steven, we both know how outrageously important this can be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'll just go out first and say this. The hooks that the JBO lures come with are fantastic,
yes.
and I do use them. But there's the big but here. We're talking modifications.
Mm-hmm.
I really get crazy about treble hook modifications on my bucktails. Mm-hmm. And I think I take it to the next level probably. But I mean, you know, I'm sure I got boxes and boxes of hooks. I mix them out all the time. I try different models every season. And I love finding how big of a treble can I get away with the shortest shank, the widest gap, with the best hooking percentage. And that's probably it's an easy modification, but, you know, again, out of, you know, God, we don't even want to go down this road. In the guiding world, most of the people that we're taking out don't modify anything.
No.
And so one way is, you know, if you're new into the muskie fishing sport, or you want to kind of take things up to the 2.0 level this season for 2020, change the hooks on your blade baits, you know, modify. And then even if it's a spinner bait, easy modification I'm making is going from a single hook to a single hook with a trailer stinger hook on mm-hmm. it. So I'll end there, Steven.
And one thing, I'll give away one of the secrets that Joe's doing is he's putting 8-0s. On a lot of his spinner baits, or on a lot of his inline spinners, is short shank 8-0, which is a great one. As far as like safety pin spinner baits, I'll tell you flatly, that to me is probably one of the best modding platforms in musky fishing. So one of my go-tos, and it's not because it's Joe's stuff, I just like it as a modding platform, is the Slop Master, right? It comes with a a Willow Leaf or a Colorado. Number one, on my boat, I have a little Plano clear plastic box full of different blades. Okay, so number one, split ring pliers, and you can switch out the blade on there. So I have Slop Masters with a number 10 on it. I've got Slop Masters with a French blade. I've got them with fluted. I've got them with Colorado. I've got them with Indiana. And so I don't need like 12 Slop Masters or 12 Lindy Tandems or whatever you want it to be. I have one bait and a bunch of different blades, so I can get versatility out of that bait immediately. So if I really want to just a hauling butt, blade bait, put a big French blade on there, put a big willow blade on there, put a small blade on there, so you can obviously change those blades out quickly with a pair of split ring pliers. Another one that I stole this from Joe, I'm sure you do it too. You can take a rubber core sinker and bend it around that front hook on a spinner bait, so you can get better castability, deeper running depths if you want it. And Joe's got a video of it. I'll put a link on that. It's a great mod.
It's amazing. That's one of the like just super killer safety pin spinner tips of all time. It's unbelievable.
Stuff also too, you know, he has another little line about trailer hooks and grub tails. So trailer hooks, I'll do a short video on this at some point, but the thing with trailer hooks, I've found the easiest way to put those on any bait is with a zip tie. So you can get small zip ties, zip tied around the main hook of that spinner bait. That other hook is not coming off. You clip it off. And so for me to sit here and fool around with all this different ways of putting trailer hooks on, I can change my trailer hooks on. If I'm casting rocks in open water, I have a treble hook on my spinner baits, period.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so I can.
And it's just, it's the thought of it, like, you know, initially goes against the grain, but there's no reason you shouldn't be doing that.
No.
You know,
if I'm not in the weeds and I don't need it to be weedless, or I've got a client on the boat that, you know, maybe it's not their, I don't anticipate them to have the greatest hook set, I might be throwing a Slop Master with a 7-aught short shank off the back that's, you know, and you're just, that zip tie won't allow that sucker to come off there. And then you've got ultimate hookup ratio on that. This, like Chaz, you already said, this giant rabbit hole on things that you can do. Another, I'll just a couple off the top of my head, is one of my tricks is a cork. So you can actually put a piece of cork on that front hook, and then you've got a slower fall rate, because I jig spinner baits a lot. So just the guys that get what I'm saying right there, you can do that. Another thing you do with a multi-arm spinner bait is you can take a bobber, cut it down the center, and super glue it to the front, and basically you've got a suspending bucktail.
That is, see, that's what I'm talking about, guys. Stephen Paul, ideas like that. I mean, oh my god!
And we could just go for hours. He asks about grub tails and all that stuff. I always recommend to people, if you're throwing like a Slop Master, you're throwing a Lindy Tandem, you're throwing any safety pin style spinner arm, play with those different trailer hooks or options of soft plastic on your trailer hooks. Quickly, I'll tell you, if I'm straight retrieving it, I want a paddle tail on the back. If I'm jigging it, I'm looking for something that has multi tendrils, like a little skirt that'll sort of flutter a little bit on that back hook. This is sit here for way too long, so we'll move on. Kyle, I hope that's enough ideas to get you started there. We're going to go ahead and move on to Nikki, because this question perks my interest, and I know I got to stop here. Nikki is the next one up. They say, should I be trying to land muskies quickly as possible? Should I be trying to land my muskies as quickly as possible? Would I lose more fish if I played them down longer? So basically asking, do I need to get them in the boat?
Really good question.
And me and you are going to be on both ends, I guarantee. Because I'm slow,
you know what?
Man.
I don't know, man. I don't know, because I have actually, well, it varies quite a bit, but I will say this. Let's just talk big muskies. And first off, I guess I'll just say the first thing I'm looking for, and usually as you get, you know, more experience in this muskie game, you just have an eye for looking. You can generally tell how well is that fish hooked.
Yeah.
And right away, generally speaking, if I've got a fish that's not hooked well, it kind of depends. I try not to put as much pressure on them, and that's going to lend itself to a longer fight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm also going to say is, is when I got a big fish, and I have changed this in the last probably 2 years of my fishing, I have gone toward fighting big muskies over 45 inches. Just I fight them a little longer. I take my time with them. I try to tire them out more. There is no I have you know, in my younger years, and even when I've been experienced, I feel I've gotten myself into trouble trying to horse a big fish, and you can't do it effectively. They're just too big and mean, and they're too heavy, and they're too powerful to horse them in and just forcefully get them into a net. Unless mm-hmm. you're in a position where you need to, because you're fearing the fish is going to come off.
Yeah.
And if it's like a ditch effort, and you're like, okay, if I don't go for it now, I'm going to be really in jeopardy of losing this muskie. That's when I would say, okay, go for it. But more often than not, I'm a fan of, you know, play the game, you know, mm-hmm. play the fish out, you know, not to the level, you know, again, if your water temps are a little warmer, not to the level
hurt
the fish. But, you know, again, let's just talk big fish, man. I'll just restate my side here is, you know, get them to a point where you can make an effective, you know, a net job on that muskie. You don't want to try netting a fish.
Oh, God,
you know,
no.
When it's still got a lot of, when
don't
it's still
try
got
to
a
get
lot
them green.
Of the tank.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. And so again, that's my take, Steve. I mean, real, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I get accused of taking too long a lot of times, and I'm not talking, like you said, I say this, and you did the same thing I just about did, where you, like, you put this caveat, like, oh, if the condition, we're not talking about fighting these things in 80-degree water in the middle of, you know, the hot water. We're talking about a normal length fight here. It's not 5 minutes or something.
Yeah. Even my longest fight's like 2 minutes. You know,
yeah,
maybe
exactly.
2 minutes.
I'll give a big secret away here. I have a way that I land big fish, and I don't lose many big fish because of this. If I have a big head shaker on there, I'm talking boom, boom. You know, it's
you
know what I'm talking about, like a hoss.
Oh yeah.
Immediately, I step on the trolling motor.
Ooh.
I drag them. And so what happens is it forces water over their gills faster than they can take in the dissolved oxygen. And it ends the fight real quick. So if you put pressure on them with the boat, they stop moving. And so
that's a cool judo tactic
is called doing this for way too long by myself and catching 50s by myself and going, I'm sick of losing these things. What am I going to do? So that's and I'm talking, if it's a big fish and you're in that position, you've got to slow him down. And it's sort of off the field as like quickly as possible. Another thing that I've observed too, is you can slow these big fish down by taking pressure off of them also. And that's my sort of my typical landing. And I'm not pulling the fish with the motor. I'm not saying I'm dragging this thing across the lake either, folks. Don't get me wrong. What I'm doing with that is I'm taking that pressure and sort of moving him along, pacing him a little bit with the boat.
And let me just pop in here, Steve, just real quick, because you mentioned, I love your comment there on actually taking some pressure, not applying as much pressure. Again, we're talking big fish here,
mm-hmm.
on the monsters. Because again, something's going to give.
Okay. I got to tell you the story of how I figured that one out. Cause this is just stupid, right? It was a mid to late spring trip. Right. And we had gotten past dark. It was sort of not a hot day, but it was like, I don't want to stand out here at noon. So we got a later start and we're going to fish after dark. And the guy latches into a fish and it's just boom, it's game on. And I see his rod go and I went, this is a big fish, right? It's head shaking. It's doing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're coming around. And he's going, I lost it. Just, I'm talking, this is just, it's superbly quick, right? It goes under the boat. And he sort of got pressure and he takes the pressure off and I'm like, gah. I said, you know, and he's whining already. He just, his line is slack. It's just a mess, right? I look on the other side of the boat and the fish is not broken off. It's on the other side of the boat sitting with a bait in its mouth, just sitting completely still. And he was caught in the back engine. So he couldn't feel the fish on the other side. He was just thought it was completely snagged. So quietly, I come over here. I lift the engine up. I get his line out of the prop and I said, start reeling. because I didn't know if the bait was hanging out of this thing's mouth and it was just sitting there. He reels it up and the fish is still there. It was sitting there, hooked up on the other side of the boat, 10 feet off the boat, saw it sitting on the surface. And it opened my eyes to go, he doesn't know what's in his face. It doesn't make us, I mean, and I'm getting far afield here, but I mean, they get stuck in the mouth probably every time they eat a crappie, a bluegill, a bass, or a catfish. You know what I'm saying?
It's yeah.
And they respond to the fighting you're getting from them. They're responding to the pressure. And I watched this fish just easily, once he started putting a little pressure on it, sort of came along. And once he started pulling hard, it went crazy again. And so I've realized with those big fish, you can let off of them and they will calm down. Now, don't write a nasty email and say, hey, I took the pressure off of a fish and I lost it, USOB. Yeah. You know, within reason
it,
here.
It is very situational, and it comes with an asterisk of there are a thousand different scenarios out there. But, you know, I'm in the same boat with you, Stephen, that, you know, again, overpressuring big fish in general is a poor idea, you know.
And you're just taxing your knots, your leaders, your hooks. I mean,
you know,
they're going to find.
And not even that, but the flesh of the fish, you know, if the, if the hook and the split ring and the line isn't going to give, the actual fish that, you know, that whatever it's hooked into is going to give.
Well,
know?
You always say this stuff and like, we're going to wrap it up, but you bring it up, which is that pressure is you're wallowing out the hole. I can't think of a better word, but you're putting pressure on a hole that you've put in this thing's face. And the more pressure you put, the more it's tearing into it, the more he pulls away, the larger the hole gets. And
you do.
You know,
you want to be able to grab the net and be able to scoop them up safe and sound for a photo.
You know, here we talk about this. This just makes you reminiscent from the old days where you just reached over the boat and shot him. No, I'm kidding. It was a lot easier back in Grandpa's day. Always hooked up, kabloosh. So, moving
that
on.
Is funny, man.
Derek asks, what are some good choices for smaller musky reels? What sizes and brands would you recommend?
Cool. Yeah. Well, this sounds like a trip to muskyshop.com, but I'll start.
I'm on here, baby.
Dude, we got this down, man. You know, my favorite small musky reel out there is the Daiwa Lexa 300 size. I love the 300H. It's just a workhorse reel. For clients and myself, they put up with a beating, and they have an extra powerful drag system in there as well. So, you know, compared to the 400 size, I think they're, you know, pound for pound, just as strong as the big dogs, but they're lightweight, they're ergonomic. Mm-hmm. And again, they're durable. So that's my easy boat on my, you know, I fished Garcias for a long time, and they have some fantastic models as well. As does Shimano. Mm-hmm. But again, that's my go is that Daiwa Lexa 300. Man,
that's
those things are fantastic.
Killer reel. I had a client show up. He had the 13 Fishing Concept Z. I'm looking at here on muskyshop.com. And that was a really small profile reel, but I mean, just a killer reel. Seemed like, you know, it's for like a downsize. I've not personally thrown it, but it looked way cooler than anything I throw. I throw old man reels, but I'll be the last dude on the planet throwing around a Boo Garcia, you know? So, but it's, I don't think you can go wrong. I mean, I've got Musky Shop pulled up right now. I mean, you got the 300 series Tranks, which is a little bit smaller. I mean, I don't even know how big that Shimano Corrado is, but it looks bass profile. The Shimano SLX. I mean, all these reels, I mean, goodness gracious, the equipment nowadays is so good. But I'm with you. I mean, I've had Lexas. Joe fishes Lexas. You fish Lexas. That's going to be my vote for the 300 series there, for as far as like I've seen it in action. I know it's going to get the job done. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just like them because they're just lightweight and durable. You know, that's just my favorite thing about them.
All right, man. Well, let's go ahead, and we've got one more question here, and we're going to have to do another podcast where they have so many questions, and we love getting these because we have a blast doing it. And we have one more gear question from Patrick. Patrick says,
all right.
I'm looking to buy a new, I can't talk today. I'm sorry. I can't read and talk. Obviously, I could talk, but I'm rambling here. Patrick wants to know, or he says, I'm looking to buy a new net. What size do you recommend? Should I buy a huge one? Always
oh,
get,
boy.
Oh, man, I got a net I could catch an elephant in, but what do you think, Chase?
Yeah, no, right? And I it's kind of funny. Mine is older. I got an old Fredo Power Catch that I've got. I mean, I think I've actually had that forever. But if I was in the market for a new one without naming any brands, let's just go generic. And this is something that I have to say that I've stolen from Joe over the years on the show. Mm-hmm. Is the beauty of these nets that are really lightweight, especially because, you know, I spend, as we all do when we're scouting as guides, we spend a lot of time, you know, fishing solo or even just whatever. It's just nice to have a net that's lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could, you know, combine, lighter weight with a big size, because, you know, I mean, if you're going to buy a net, they're all pretty expensive, you know, relatively speaking. I would buy something that can handle big fish. You can take this to, you know, Canada. You can fish, you know, down south and Tennessee. You can fish in, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Steve?
Man, I'm a gear junkie. I've got three nets.
Okay.
You're talking about the old school teardrop Frable, right? Is one that you're using, like the
old Power Catch.
Catch.
It's like a big Kahuna chassis. Yeah.
That's what's in my boat right now. And that gets the job done for anything. I've put a double nickel in that. I know you've netted monsters and caught monsters with that. I have also, I know you're trying to not name brands, but it's so hard. So I have one of the Giganto Drifter Predator nets, right? It's huge.
Ooh.
And what the difference is, and what I consider with nets, what net I'm going to have on the boat that day or for what trip, is how good of an angler I'm with. If so, it's tough because, like, you're the net ninja. You're a way better net man than I am. Trust me, ask Joe. There'll probably be a video of it coming up here shortly. I had a near miss, and you and Tyler Andrews are the only other human beings on the planet that know the pressure of trying to net a fish for Joe Bucher. You know, it's a little hot. I don't care if it's a 22 incher. The pressure's high, and I sort of pooched one. We didn't lose it. I just had a miss. But I'm thinking, like, with clients, because the better you get at this sport, the better you are at, let's bring him in head first. Let's really bring him in well, opposed to sometimes I've done it for clients. I'm netting him from the tail back. I'm scooping him sideways. I'm taking him any way I can get him.
With client netting, and sometimes that's a whole different ballgame. That is a win game.
As guides, what we're seeing is, if you think it's bad with us on the boat, how is it sometimes if it's them and a buddy? So what I always tell people is get the biggest net you can fit in your boat.
Yep.
And it's just one of those deals of, you know, if he's coming in kooky, or you got it all messed up, or, you know, you haven't caught a muskie in 6 months and all hell's breaking loose, I'd rather have the big net to get him in there. I don't know.
Absolutely.
You know?
I don't know what the analogy is, but, you know, it allows you room for error. And especially, you know, that's the big thing. I did want to say a little shout out, you know, the most interesting net man in the world, Chris Cadorzi. So you and I are at least,
we
have different specialties, but Chris Cadorzi is the most interesting net man in the world.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Chris. Great angler, by the way.
Yes.
What
do they call him? Cleat Hook and Chris or something?
I don't know.
Tyler Andrews said they're digging it out of the cleat and Joe's got one on, you know?
But they did get it though.
Listen, I don't care how you get them in the net by hook or crook. You know, if it's
some of them are ugly, but you know what? If you're posing and closing a show, that's a good thing.
I'll tell you a funny thing that happened. I was actually fishing with some friends one time, right? And they wouldn't, you know, they're just doing it themselves. You know, like, I was gonna net the thing, and I'm sitting here going, let me net it. I do this every day, right? And of course not. My buddy grabs a net and he goes in, and immediately I watch it go in slow-mo. He hooks the other end of this bucktail, right?
Yeah.
So the fish is, hold on, let me, got a beep. Sorry about the beeps, folks. But this fish is, so now it's hooked to the net and hooked on the other side, right? And the dude just, my friend just reaches out the boat, grabs a thing by the tail and just like pulls it over the net backwards. It was one of the scummiest net jobs I've ever seen, but it was in the net. You know what I'm saying?
That's all that counts.
It's all that counts, man. It gets messy. So, Chaz, thank you so much for taking the time to answer some more questions, folks.
Yeah, Stephen, absolutely. My pleasure, man. I just have an absolute blast talking with you, and I can't believe we've already been on for an hour. And
I know. That's like
literally – dude, we could be on for five without a blink of an eye.
I know. I mean, that's why I was like, we got to wrap, but we stay. And that's the problem is me and you do these, like, we get through five questions.
Exactly. And how about this, Steve? Let's give a shout out to our Muskie 360 fans.
Yes.
Guys, thanks for sending these awesome questions
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
You know, please keep them coming, because Steven and I and Joe and Tyler and all the other guys, Mena and
Doug,
you know,
and Lee,
forgetting a gazillion guys, Bernie Yates, and everybody. We love them, and it's a lot of fun. So,
the Muskie 360 podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and the Muskie Shop.